This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode available each week and available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. So here I want you guys to take a listen to my exclusive interview with director Rod Blackhurst on his new film, Here Alone, which follows Lucy Walters as a woman named Anne in the aftermath of an infected outbreak. She spends the first half of the film alone, just trying to survive deep in the woods, scraping by on supplies and sanity. Along the way, Anne meets Chris and Olivia and decides to take them in. But the question remains, can a person surrounded by solace suddenly reconnect with a civilized world? Well, once you see Here Alone, you'll see how that plays out. Here Alone director Rod Blackhurst has had an interesting life, to say the least. You're going to hear about it a little bit in the interview. And this feature film, it was his opportunity to showcase what he could accomplish with a narrative feature. He's already found success with his Amanda Knox documentary on Netflix. If you saw that, it's a great documentary. Be sure to check it out. And if you happen to be working on season 3 of True Detective, Rod is waiting on your call, as you'll find out by the end. We discuss the challenges of shooting his film in the woods, his actors and their choices, and even his next project, revolving around a parolee who decides to head north to taste real freedom. This is a really engaging conversation with the director of Here Alone. And I should note that the movie won the Audience Award at the Tribeca Film Festival. That's a big honor. And the film, while it is a little bit of a slow burn, it is really engaging, really interesting. And Lucy Walters is just great, because you have to be great to hold the screen for as long as she does alone. And she manages to accomplish that. It's extremely well done. And the ending, it really punches you in the gut in a good way. So be sure to check that out, Here Alone. It's now available on video on demand. But without further ado, here's our exclusive interview with director Rod Blackhurst.
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I was reading up on you. You've got quite an interesting life. You were, correct me if I get any of this wrong, you were an alpine racer. You spent several years touring with the Frays, documenting their lives. You got the first detailed account of events from Amanda Knox herself. Apparently, you hang out with Dave Franco a lot, and somehow you ended up with a degree in French literature. Is there anything I missed?
I mean, probably, but we can start there.
That's fantastic.
I mean, I think, like, gosh, it's funny hearing all that kind of said back to me. I want to be able to have looked back on life one day and said, man, I really tried to do a lot of strange and wonderful things, and I really just want my daughter to think I'm cool someday. So maybe this is like a collection of hopefully cool things.
I think so, man. Usually when you're researching interview subjects, it's films, movies, TV, specials. Yours is just all over the map. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I personally was obsessed with the Amanda Knox story for some time. I just want to tell you, I love that documentary. So thanks for nailing that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think a lot of people were obsessed with it, which is the reason why the film exists in the first place.
Is that something you put to, and I'm going to get to the movie in a second, but is that something you put together, or is that?
Yeah, so I started working on that film in 2011. And it wasn't until maybe 2014 that we conducted the first interview with Amanda Knox. And in that time period, we didn't know if we were going to make a film, but we knew that it was the type of story that we wanted to tell, and that there was an important story to be told there. But yes, that was something that we came up with on our own and wanted to make.
Great. Well, the first thing I ask anybody who comes by is, what motivated or inspired you to take on the life of a performer initially? Was there a moment in your life, or a filmmaker, I should say, was there a moment in your life where it just struck you?
Well, this is funny. Actually, I grew up without a TV in the middle of the woods in upstate New York, and I thought movies were either strange news programs or these terrifying documentaries. And I know that must sound crazy, but I can remember being at my friend Billy Moose's house, and Billy Moose's mom, or his grandmother, actually let us watch movies that were probably not designed for 10-year-olds or 11-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And I think we watched we watched RoboCop and Full Metal Jacket. And I had nightmares for weeks because I thought that these were these you know, these news programs or these documentaries about these real people that had these things happen to them. And I was terrified and horrified by it. And I don't know if that's certainly not the reason why I wanted to pursue a career in filmmaking or a life as a storyteller. But I kind of look back at that and I go, man, like, would it have been different if I had seen like, you know, a film by so-and-so at that time. But what I do know is that because I didn't have a TV growing up, I read a lot and I kind of read everything I could. And because my parents lived in the middle of nowhere, I played in the woods for hours and hours upon end. I had no neighbors, and sort of my imagination was what I had to play with because there were no people that lived nearby. There were no friends that lived nearby. I couldn't get caught in front of the TV. And so I just always loved telling stories and playing out adventures. And I feel like films in and of themselves are adventures, and making films is also an adventure. And I just wanted to have that life. I wanted to tell stories that can make people feel things and transport them and give them a different perspective or a different way of looking at something or somebody. That was something I always wanted to do. I never knew how for the longest period of time.
Wow. And that's a perfect transition, because apparently Here Alone is your autobiography of the one time you were trapped in the woods.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I think the funny thing is that, like, you know, we had made a short film several years ago that was kind of a proof of concept, not for this film, but more of a proof of concept as a group of filmmakers and a group of collaborators. And David Ebeltoft, who wrote that short film, which was called Alone Time — the alone has nothing to do with Here Alone, just happens to have the same word in the title. David wrote Here Alone, the feature film, for me to direct, because it was something that we could shoot where he lives in Western New York. And so it was something that we could use the resources we had. We knew that these locations were there. We knew that these settings were there. And at the same time, he wrote a film that we could make for the amount of money that we could raise, which was, you know, $100. And so with that in mind, we had to have very few locations, very small cast that had to be very contained. And then he also knew that, I love craft. Like, I love cinematography. I love sound design. I love score. I love location. I love costume design. I love production design. I love hair and makeup. I love all of these things that we knew we could have a little more control of in proving our acumen, our creative acumen as storytellers and filmmakers. And so that in making Here Alone, we could show people that we were capable of being feature filmmakers.
And I doubt you had any idea it was going to turn out to be such a success. I mean, it won the Tribeca Audience Award. It's doing well. It's finally coming out, but it's already done well in festivals.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I think we had three goals for this movie. The first was to make a movie that was cohesive and coherent, even with its limitations and constraints. We wanted to get the film into any film festival, and we wanted to tell the film, or, you know, be able to have the film find distribution and connect with audiences. And those were our three goals. And even those felt ambitious. And I think that everything else that has happened to the movie has been sort of a wonderful blessing. We, of course, had no idea that we would end up in the position we're in. But I hope that people see the film as a proof of our capabilities as a group of friends and as a group of collaborators. And that if we can do something for nothing, just imagine what we could do with $1 million.
Wow. Now, you going to the beginning, I guess you were fascinated with the post-apocalyptic world first from reading Shoots on the Beach, if I read correctly. What was it about that world, that landscape, that was really enticing for you?
There's two things that I love about movies that take place after the collapse of society or the end of the world, or the movies that take place while the end of the world is happening. And that is trying to imagine what any of us would do in those circumstances. And namely myself, again, I grew up in the woods, like playing scenarios like this out in my head all the time. But whether it's with On the Beach or Peter Heller's book, The Dog Stars, I'm just fascinated by the lengths that humans would go to both preserve themselves and what they know of the world and their loved ones. But I'm also fascinated by the adventure that can take place. I think there's something wonderful about a level playing field where, you know, wealth doesn't matter anymore. Fame doesn't matter anymore. None of these things matter. What matters are your resources, your ability to understand what's happening, your, you know, these skill sets that you have that, you know, that really don't have anything to do with what life you would have had before the apocalypse. I think there's something magical in that adventure. Now, maybe this makes me sound morbid or macabre, but I really like imagining what I would do if I was faced with any of these circumstances or any of these situations.
And I think it's important to note for people that you haven't yet watched Here Alone, there are infected people roaming about, but I would say it's even a minor detail. Would you say this is more a film about surviving the elements and how past choices influence the future? Or how would you classify it?
We hope that people watch Here Alone because they're looking for, you know, a post-apocalyptic zombie movie. They come for that genre element, but they stay for the character study that exists beneath that skin or beneath that layer. We love people. We love characters. We love human experience. And I think that's something that elevated genre films and genre films give us the ability to do, is find these ways to present stories to people, kind of with a different, there's a different medium here. You know, here we're using obviously the apocalypse and the infection, as the tools to propel the film forward and both define the nature of the times. But if you take those away, it still is, what we hope, a compelling story about human experience and suffering and loss and grief. And that those are the elements that we love about movies ourselves.
Yeah, I like how the virus is actually spread more as a disease as opposed to don't get bit, and, you know, that's blood in your eyes or your mouth, you know, just like any other contaminated fluid is an issue. Protective masks are worn. I really like that aspect of it. Is it hard or difficult as a filmmaker to try to do something different in the zombie genre? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's come out the last few years, so I'm sure that's a challenge in itself.
You're right, but I'm glad that you noted that it's actually an infection and not the undead. I hope that people see that or recognize that. I know it gets called a zombie film because it's kind of the easy way to label it, but we really wanted people to know that these were not, these people were able to be killed, but that the infection was truly a narrative element, right? A narrative element in that, you know, the infected have been reduced to this existence that sees them just existing to eat and to feed. And that's actually where we find Anne at the beginning of the film, right? She's living like an animal, more or less, in the woods. She is spending all of her time trying to find enough food. And that's where our infected are as well. They exist to eat. And so I hope that that people see the infected as a narrative consideration and also not just as sort of a genre film element. It's a little bit of a meta commentary, right, on where our main character is.
Yes, extremely. And Lucy Walters, by the way, she's great in this. And I think it should be noted that she is forced to carry the movie with little to no dialogue for long stretches of the film. Can you talk about why she is the right fit for Anne and how she approached the character? Did she go all method? Did she live in the woods for a month? I mean, how did she prepare?
Well, what Lucy Walters said was, I want to be covered head to toe in mud and shit for 20 days, and I want to do your movie. That's verbatim. I'm sure she would say the same thing. But of course, that's not the truth at all. And I think for all of us, we all had something to prove. And I think for Lucy, that was the case too. She's a fantastic actress. And I think this role was an opportunity for her to own a character. This is her movie. She's in the film, you know, almost 100% of the time. And like you said, there's a lot of the film where she's not talking. We have to want to watch her. We have to want to empathize with her as an audience. And, see something beneath the surface, even when there's no words to say just that. And I think she has the eyes and the skin, and there's something magnetic about her that we are drawn to trying to figure out. And so she, you know, there was a combination of that. And then the fact that she was looking for a role like this, Lucy and Gina Piersanti, who plays Olivia in the film, both told us that they don't get offered films like this that empower women, especially in the genre film space, that, you know, kind of treat them as these very strong, you know, identified characters that aren't victims or aren't, you know, leaning on men for their successes or to help them figure situations out. And I think they both loved having characters that treated women as the most important parts of the story.
Yeah, and they have an interesting arc as well. As in Olivia and Chris's relationship, that is unique. That went a different way than I thought it was going to. The movie has a lot of harrowing choices that Anne has to make throughout. And it's interesting how the choices from the beginning of the film basically tie into what she decides near the end. It's all really well connected. Can you speak about Olivia and Chris's relationship at all? I mean, was that the plan going in?
The film that you see is the film that was scripted.
Yeah, wow.
And the film that David wrote. We actually, some things changed in production. Like we had to change the location of a trailer park to a location of a house because we didn't have access to a trailer park when filming. But the relationships that you see on screen and the nuances of those relationships came from David Ebeltoff's creative brain. David used to tell me that he was always a little worried about sharing this film with his parents, who were going to question all the choices when he sees all of the messed up things going on. And mainly that our lead actress enjoys covering herself in mud and shit. And his parents might say, man, what did we teach our boy?
That's fair.
I think that I hope that with Chris and Olivia, as well as with Anne that people can recognize bits of themselves in each of those characters, or they could imagine and understand why each of those people do the things that they do or make the choices they make. And in that way, again, we can all imagine what it would be like to be caught up in these circumstances and in these times.
During production, can you talk about how that production worked? Because you're basically, you went home again to a degree, apparently you went back to the woods. And
Yes.
As you're setting those scenes up, does that kind of take you back to your childhood and recreating those events for play when you were a kid?
Well, making a movie is like going to summer camp, and especially when you make a movie in the middle of nowhere, you're calling all of your friends and your creative collaborators to head out, you know, over the horizon, to disappear into the woods. You're gonna basically live out there, you know, while the rest of the world keeps going, and you're going to hunker down and try to make something awesome. And I think for all of us, the experience of making the movie was this fantastic bonding experience of both understanding how to be better collaborators and be better friends and better filmmakers. But it was also just an amazing, fun time where it felt like it was us against the world. Here we were living in a hotel in the middle of nowhere, eating all of our meals together for 3 weeks, you know, going to the same laundromat on the weekends, you know, walking over to Walmart at night to buy, you know, an extra case of beer. And there's something so wonderful about that process. And I think we all felt so fortunate to be there, to be making a movie after all those years of not being able to find the opportunities elsewhere. And I hope that comes through in the creation of the film and the way that people talk about the film.
Absolutely. So what's next for you? I mean, are you going to the moon? What? So you can add to your list?
I'm probably going to go back to a professional skiing career, which is not true at all. Again, that's the second lie I've told in this interview. What's next? I mean, would it be crazy of me to say that I'm sitting around hoping that the producers of True Detective season 3 call me up and ask me to direct an episode? That would be true. I am hoping that I will get that phone call. We're right now as a team, working on making a film called North that David and I wrote with our friend Elgin James. And Elgin is executive producing, writing, and I think directing the AMC series, The Mayans, which is the spinoff of The Sons of Anarchy.
Oh,
but
yeah,
Elgin
yeah.
is a dear old friend. And we wrote a film called North years ago. And we're trying to put that film together right now, you know, while also, you know, waiting around for phone calls about True Detective.
Well, why don't you go direct the episode of The Mayans and you submit it to HBO. They see it. Then boom, it's all connected.
Exactly. We keep our fingers crossed for sure.
That sounds great. I did like the concept of North too, by the way. I read about it. That seems interesting. It's based on a short that you did a few years back, right?
It is. Well, it's actually based on a piece of short fiction that my friend Matthew Jordan wrote. And it's just something we've always wanted to make. And funny enough, North mimics the exact narrative structure of Here Alone. Although we wrote North first, so in reality, Here Alone mimics the structure of North. But with North, people would tell us, no one wants to watch a dark character drama about a man figuring out what it means to be free, who's on screen 100% of the time, that also has this sort of like storytelling structure. And so in some ways, Here Alone is a proof that North does work, both as a narrative structure in the way that the flashbacks inform what's happening in the present day, mm-hmm. but also as a film about one person figuring out what it means to be free, who's on screen 100% of the time. It just so happens in Here Alone that that is a woman, and it happens to be in North that that is a man. So it's funny because people told us, well, this way of telling a story doesn't work. And to them, I would say, well, please watch Here Alone because it actually does work, and here's the proof of concept.
That's perfect. Well, I got to let you go, but I want to wish you best of luck on the release, and thanks so much for coming by.
No, of course. Thank you so much, Aaron. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks. Anytime.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Bye-bye. There you go, guys. That was our interview with Rod Blackhurst, director of Here Alone, and remember that it is on video on demand right now, so please go check that out. It's worth a look. Take a chance. See something different. Skip a blockbuster. See Here Alone. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers from the world of independent cinema whenever we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. I think you're going to see more from Rod in the coming years. I really do. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode each week and is always available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson. And remember, the next time that you head into a theater or you watch Here Alone on demand, buy popcorn. We'll be right back.